This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. Back by popular demand, this week and next on the Compass, we are replaying two of our most popular Compass shows ever, each one of them portraying a hallowed PT establishment from the halcyon years of the 1970s. This week's show is titled Tales of the Town Tavern and was recorded at a Jefferson County Historical Society First Friday Lecture event in April of 2013. And now we go inside the Compass. For about a decade, the Town Tavern was Port Townsend's living room, the place where a good part of the town partied, lived, worked, and dreamed. It was a place where wandering souls cut loose by the blossoming counterculture came to find new definition. The tavern was located in the ornate N.D. Hill building next to the old Quincy Street ferry landing in the middle of downtown. Founded by a group of young psychology graduates, it was an experiment in communal living where, for 20 hours of work each week, you could have a room upstairs and all the beer you wanted to drink. And if you didn't drink alcohol, there was soda. Ann Welch and Jenny Westall were two of the Town Tavern denizens from that era, and it was they who organized the festivities that evening on behalf of the Historical Society's Oral History Project. Westall emceed the event alongside Larry Dennison, who was a bartender at the tavern and who was the current owner of Dos Oki's Barbecue. The leader ran a front-page story about the tavern 2 days before the event, and the publicity worked. By half an hour before the event's official starting time, all the seats were taken, and the standing crowd was spilling out into the street in front of the Cotton Building venue. There were multiple instances of long-lost friends recognizing one another with much shouting, hugging, and laughter. Some of the gray-haired participants were recognizable as older versions of the hip young people lounging in overstuffed couches shown in a rotating slideshow of those halcyon days, which supplied a steadily shifting backdrop to the stories that emerged. Here's Larry Dennison.
It's really exciting for me because I've been thinking about it for years. Hank Chimslin came into my place, some years ago, and I didn't recognize him. You know, as a matter of fact, I don't recognize half of you because you all got gray hair now. But anyway, Hank came up and he ordered a sandwich and he said, "I'll take a pulled pork sandwich, Larry." And I said, "Who are you?" And he said, "It's Hank." And I went, "Hank, great." Well, I ended up going outside and sitting at his table with him, and we started telling stories that I had long since forgotten. And an hour later, we'd rehashed a lot of old ground, and the fellow that was with Hank, all of a sudden he chimed in and said, "God, I wish I'd have been here during those times." But it was an amazing time. It was quite a convergence. Thanks so much to Bill and the Historical Society for doing this, because I think that it was truly, truly a remarkable time. I got here in 74, and the Town Tavern was already going strong then. One of the original owners and building residents is Tom Duke, and he is with us tonight. And I really want to learn more about how the thing started, and I'm sure that Tom can give us some background on that. So if Tom's ready, I'm going to turn the mic over to him.
Thank you, Larry. I'm just amazed at the number of people here. Were you all affected by this place? God. Many years ago, I was a student at the University of Oregon, and I went and listened to Buckminster Fuller talk. The one thing I remember from his talk is he said that he never knew what he was going to say, because to prepare would make it not creative. So I have not prepared a thing. On the other hand, I have been thinking, because I was talking with Larry this morning, and I'm thinking about how the Town Tavern, for so many of us, provided sort of a foothold for those of us who were seeking and those of us who were a little lost, and we were young, and, you know, we were going through transitions of some sort or other. And it gave us a place to do that. Now, when I came here, did I have any intention to be in a transition? Heck no. Did I know we were going to be providing that? No. So, probably it'd be appropriate just to have a little history, how it all started. Is Jeanette here by any chance? Jeanette, who was then Heinkel? I wish she was. Jeanette is a wonderful woman, and I haven't seen her since 1975. I would love to see her. So, Jeanette and I were teaching assistants at the University of Oregon for a guy named Rich Ingram. And Rich was a wonderful teacher. He was our professor. He taught us a lot. One day he was up here in his boat. He was not a very good sailor and got towed in by the Coast Guard. And that was his introduction to Port Townsend. Well, he wandered around and saw the Indy Hill building, and for some reason he got this harebrained idea that we should come up here and do some stuff. Well, Jeanette and I were his teaching assistants. So Rich came back to Eugene, and he presented this idea, we should do this. Well, I came up here with my then-girlfriend. We checked it out and said, well, sure, we're going to do this. So we bought the building. Now, the building, for those of you who, well, some of you know, we paid $53,000 for it. Now, that was 40 years ago, but, I mean, I thought it was a huge amount of money. And, yeah, I guess it was. I don't know. But what we soon found is that the proceeds from the pool table paid the mortgage. Which is true. With a little extra tossed in from the condom machine in the men's room. So Jane and I were the first two people to move into the building, and we moved in there, and we were literally clearing out dead pigeons, and we had the second floor apartment on the back. We were the first people here. And I have to say, I have no idea how the organization developed. I had no idea what we were going to be doing. Really, I don't. It was just this sort of organic process where these people started showing up, and we had a business. We had the Town Tavern. Now, my job with Katie Harwood, some of you probably knew her, we were to start the little deli in the back. Well, we had very little experience, but we set about doing it. And one of the things that started happening is we started making money, but we never really thought that that would happen. And so we got a lawyer, and we realized at some point all we'd really done was to agree to the law. So I don't know what more to say. For myself personally, I'm a Vietnam vet, so I had gotten back from Vietnam, and I went to the university, and I graduated, and then what am I going to do? And this thing sort of showed up. Well, one of the things that was going on, which is pretty personal, is I was sort of trying to figure out what my sexual orientation was, which I eventually did. And but this place helped me with that, and it was just a very safe environment to kind of become who you are and kind of do that. And so, we were all in these different transitions. There was a guy who is not here, who I knew had come here with his girlfriend to get out of the big city in the East Coast because he was a recovering addict, and it was a safe place for him. And those stories were just throughout the organization. And I say organization, I mean, that's one of the things that we would do, and I don't know who came up with it. We would have what we called a family meeting once a week, and it was on Sunday. It was mandatory. And we had this list of jobs that needed to be accomplished, and it was all divided into four-hour segments. And it was bartending and cooking and cleaning and all the things that needed to be done to essentially run this group of people. And so we would meet, and you could sign up for anything that you wanted to do. It was actually kind of brilliant because it generally worked. And the requirement to live there is that you had to work 20 hours a week. If you worked more than 20 hours a week, you got paid. So you got room and board for 20 hours a week. And you could do anything that you selected in four-hour segments. And we determined that anything more than a four-hour shift was too much. Now, if you wanted, you could work 20 hours of four-hour shifts in one day. and have it all done for the week. We did not care. On the other hand, there were standards, you know. There were standards of caring for each other and kind of looking out for each other. And I remember we had one guy who would come into the tavern, and he was a recovering alcoholic. But the town tavern was a living room for so many people, and they'd come to see their friends. And so we decided, well, if somebody couldn't drink alcohol, we would give them free soft beverages. So we did that. So this guy would come, and he would be able to hang out, and just that kind of stuff. I was very proud of. So I was talking with my then girlfriend a couple of days ago. Her name's Jane, and she also said to me, and I think this is very important. She said that there were kids involved with the town tavern, and she said the experience for the kids was not always good. And I'm sure that that's true. And if there are any kids in this group from that time, I would ask you to connect with Annie and talk about your experience, because, you know, it was pretty dark for some of the kids. And some of the adults here as parents, well, you know, would kind of get a little loose about things. Not all of them, but some. So some of the kids, I think, suffered in it. So it's not all bright, too. It was for me. You know, I have a story, actually, that I just remembered. There was a guy, and I can't remember his name, but he was a pretty damaged character. And yes. Well, let me tell you about Jim. I mean, we loved Jim. Jim would come in, and most of the time he was just fine. But every now and then he'd start acting up, and he would lose it. And he could get pretty offensive. And actually, I think once he got a big glass ashtray and threw it at the mirror behind the bar and broke it, which was pretty offensive. But he would get in somebody's face and confront them and just be really awful. And so we finally realized, oh, well, the police could actually help us. I'm serious. So we would call the police. And the police would come, and they would get Jim, and they would take him to jail, and they would let him out the next morning. And it was really for his protection. Well, so that was just a learning for me. I learned, okay, the police can actually be helpful. Now, we had also, I mean, there was quite a reputation about the Tan Tavern, that it was sort of a den of iniquity and everybody was doing drugs. And well, not everybody was. I wasn't, actually. I didn't do drugs. I just didn't. And I had never been into a tavern until I owned one. I'm serious. It's true. I mean, I don't know, you know. I was a Presbyterian. It's true.
We get some other folks to start sharing some stories.
That would be great. I'm willing to be rescued. Who's that back there?
In case you just tuned in, you're listening to a KPTZ Compass special, Tales of the Town Tavern, on KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend.
It's an honor to be here.
What? Say who we are.
Oh, I'm Rod Freeman, and I've lived here since about 1950. But anyway, this story, it's a Malloy story, and it's got some other characters in the Town Tavern. And this is the time the California Bill pulled a knife on me in the Town Tavern. Now, Malloy is 86 from the Town Tavern. He can't go in there, you know. He's in there, though, you know, and Heinkel's behind the bar. He does not see anything, you know. And oh, there's Greg Cedar and a guy we called Baron. He was a writer. Anyway, we were hanging around. Malloy was under the table, you know, under the round table there. And, you know, some of the people were, like, feeding him beer, you know. And Malloy was okay on a little bit of beer, you know. But, like, some people, like, Arnie would, like, buy him a fifth of whiskey and give it to him, like, unleash him on the town, you know, or something. I was like, oh, God, you know, it's going to be a wild night tonight. But so we're sitting there talking, having a good time, sunny day, and in comes California Bill. Now, I don't know if any of you remember California Bill, but if you ever seen, like, Ginger Baker, you know, behind the drums with the band Cree with that red hair flying out in a beard, you know, kind of scary guy. Anyway, he comes walking in, you know, and he walks right over by us, and Malloy said something. I don't know. He had a way of kind of making people upset. And so California Bill got in his face, you know, so I'm like, hey, Bill, you know what? It's just Malloy, you know, he's just like that. So I made the mistake of, I think I touched his jacket, maybe. And he steps back, reaches in his coat, pulls out a butcher knife like that long. Oh, God, my whole life went before my eyes. I thought, okay, what chance do I got? California Bill's got this big knife on me, Town Tavern. So I thought my best chance was to back into the bar, and when he got close enough, kick him in the nuts as hard as I could and try and grab his wrist, you know? That was my plan. I wasn't real sure it was going to work, you know? But anyway, so here he comes. He's coming at me, you know? And on one side, Greg Cedar, who is like really like a cedar tree. You might remember him. About 6'5", about 300 pounds, you know? And this guy, Barron, who we called the Bear, you know? These two big guys grabbed him by each arm. They just, you know, calmly opened the door. Those guys grabbed him and threw him out into the street and saved my life. But that's not all of the story, no. Because not a second later, from the air, dropped my old friend, who's now passed away and one of the finest men ever to come out of Port Townsend, and maybe a big hand for the memory of John Cheney. John Cheney, Lord of the Snakes. He was a two-term Marine in Vietnam and ended up kind of becoming anti-war after he got out. But he was really quite athletic. And he was one of my good buddies, one of my best friends. And he had seen this guy pull a knife on me. And I didn't see it except him dropping there. But the people out said that they saw him launch himself up on the bar, take two steps, jump in the air, and do a flip and land right beside me. I mean, things were happening so fast. I said, John. And he goes, any trouble? I went, not now. God, you know. But that's how friends at the Town Tavern can help you. Anyway.
Thanks, Rod. So, you know, normally these are billed as lectures. Not tonight. So I'm going to tell real briefly my story, the story of this serendipity I was talking about. I was born and raised in Oklahoma. I'm in Oklahoma City with my buddy, Rod, and we go to the grocery store one night, and as we're checking out, this young woman behind the counter, she starts telling us about her high school graduation trip to the Ho Rainforest. And she, you know, describes this amazing old growth forest, and there's not much of that in Oklahoma. So that very night, my pal and I decide that we're going to hitchhike out here and we're going to hike in this rainforest. And 2 weeks later, we did exactly that. We hitchhiked out here. We had these massive packs, you know. We had no clue what we were up to. But we hitched out here, made our way out to the rainforest, hiked for 10 days out there. It was the most amazing experience I'd ever had in my entire life. On our way back, we're going to come back through Port Townsend, catch the last ferry out of town, and back off to Oklahoma. Well, we missed the last ferry. And guess what's right next to the ferry landing? The Town Tavern. So we wander into the Town Tavern, and I meet Robert Urich and John Cheney, who at that time sounded just like a pirate. He'd, "Arr, matey, what are ye doing here?" You know? And I'm going, whoa, what in the world is going on here? Anyway, we ended up having a really great time that night. We stayed there. We got up the next morning. We signed up for the brick tuck, the tuck pointing crew. Now, I mean, we've been here for like 12 hours, right? And so we get up on the scaffold and we're tuck pointing bricks on the side of the building, and here comes the ferry. We come down and we load our stuff up and we get on the ferry and we're starting out across the bay. And I turned to my pal and said, "I'm moving here." And he goes, "Huh?" And I said, I'm moving back here. So I go back to Oklahoma, and I spend a year learning how to do shoe repair and barbecue. It's true. It's true. And I came back here, and it wasn't until I got off that ferry that I thought, what in the hell are you doing? What are you doing here? So I moved into the town tavern, and I'll tell you what, folks, serendipity. It was a life changer. The town tavern is it's an incubator. It's a place where you can kind of grow some roots and build up friendships, friendships that have lasted my entire life. It was an amazing experience. I mean, I have no idea where I'd be or what I'd be doing if it hadn't been for that grocery store checkout girl. But I thank her almost every day of my life. Now, here's what I want to know. Is there anybody here that can tell us a story about the Hardly Famous Sisters? Why, look, it's one of the Hardly Famous Sisters herself, Pat, my dear.
Oh, dear. Well, talk about not preparing. I didn't even think about, you know, talking in front of you guys, but this is such a thrill, and I'm so excited. And there's Gigi, my other hardly famous person. And here's Sharon. Oh, you guys.
I'd like to find Rainey. She's in Suquamish.
She died.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's part of the story. Anyway,
Patricia is not a hardly famous sister. She is the hardly found
mother.
Foundling mother. It's her fault.
Oh, heavens. I was part of a shop with a woman. I don't know if you guys remember her, but her name was Fleetwood Lou. She hung out with Brian Martell. And we had a shop in Seattle. And I got mixed up with a fellow named Ed Gehring, whose father worked out at the Fort Worden. And anyway, you know, on and on and on. And we started coming here a lot. And all of a sudden, it was time to get out of Seattle. And I had all these clothes. And so I packed all of them up and moved here with Steve Grimes. We were footloose and fancy free and looking for something to do. And so my first shop was uptown, and I'm sitting there, you know, trying to sell vintage clothing, and Sharon walks in and says, you know, we could do this, you know. And I said, well, that sounds like a lot of fun. So she and I got started on that, and I don't know how long we were up there, but then the shop next to Larry's came open, and so we moved down. Oh, Lordy, we had so darn much. But, you know, when I knew I was going to do this or come up here anyway, I thought, well, what am I going to tell them about first? Okay, am I going to tell them about Rainey naked on the swing in the town tavern, 8 months pregnant, or am I going to tell them about the time that Brian and Fleetwood decided to steal a plant from the judge's chambers and had it on the motorcycle and zoomed down and came into the town tavern, tried to hide the motorcycle under the town tavern. You know, or am I going to tell them about the time we're all sitting up in the shop smoking a joint and the police came in and asked us, you know, what we were doing? And, yeah, I mean, it was just on and on. I mean, there's so many fun stories, but let me let Gigi.
As I remember, what he said was,
"What are you girls doing?"
No, he said, "Can you girls breathe up there?" And we assured him we could, and he said, "Okay."
Sharon was the absolute epitome of being able to make something out of nothing. She walked into my shop, you know, and opened her purse, and I mean, you could have done anything. You could have caught a fish, you could have, you know, built a house, anything in this. But one of my favorite stories about Sharon and Big Dave was during Halloween, and Sharon was a Black Widow spider, and she's this tall, beautiful woman with 8 legs, and I walked down the street, and she's got Big Dave, who was, you know, probably 250 pounds, in a pink tutu, and the two of them are dancing in the middle of the street.
one more.
Okay.
But you have to tell it. The kissing booth.
Kissing booth. That's what it's called.
You tell about the kissing booth. Sure. Well, the Town Tavern didn't always look like that. You know, it had booths on that one side. And so Sharon and I decided to make a little money on the side. So we have a kissing booth. Okay, so we have this little sign that says kissing booth, regular 25 cents, and purple passion, 50. Sharon had some lip gloss.
Yours.
No, it's
that
yours.
Was yours.
$2.25 together.
But oh, we got some good kisses.
It's like you gave them away free.
Oh, I can't.
Yes, you can.
Oh, boy. But I was thinking of all the nights that we used to dress everybody up. And Brian used to be about the only one that we could get, of the guys that we could get to dress up. But all the women on the breaks, we would bring them all over to the shop. We'd dress them all up and then take them back in and parade around everything and dance. And I don't know, I was just looking at that picture, and that's how it was. There was no women in town when we moved here.
I found our introduction to the Town Tavern. I've got it, and I gave it to her in an envelope, but it talks about our grand opening. And it's a picture of the four of us and Rainey with Crescent at that time. And I don't know whether you guys know it, but Rainey passed away in March. I just found that out this afternoon. I went to look for her in Suquamish because my friend Kevin had told me that that's where she was, and I went down there looking for her, and she has passed away. But so that makes me pretty sad. But the Hardly Famous Sisters had some really good times in the Town Tavern along with all the rest of you. Thank you.
I can't imagine it without the Hardly Famous Sisters. Try and imagine, if you will, what Halloween was like with those costumers right around the corner. Amazing. So it looks like... it's Hank's turn. Hank Chimslin.
Okay, some great Halloweens, man. My rather really happy story of Town Tavern, just the dancing part was, oh my God, the floor ready to fall out. Having the floor bounce. Robert Urish was the bartender one night, and it became closing time, and me and six other maniacs, he wouldn't let out on the street. So he kicked everybody out, and he let us to continue on. All on our hands and knees on the dance floor, pretending we were dogs, having dog fights. And this went on for, I don't know, half an hour. Robert was cleaned up, and he finally goes, "You guys are done." Yeah. Our knees were sore for a couple weeks. But thanks, Robert, for a really good evening.
So, obviously, we haven't even begun to touch on all the stories. And so we're going to suggest that those who want to continue telling more great stories go down to Sirens. Go to the Town Tavern. Hey, there's a good idea. This is long overdue because some of us are no longer here. Big Dave's not with us any longer, and there are too many. So this is the time to tell our stories.
Many more stories were told of the Town Tavern that night, some of them not quite suitable for family radio, and the Oral History Project has collected many more. If you have stories of the Town Tavern that you would like to tell or hear, contact the Jefferson County Historical Society. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. This episode of The Compass was first aired on April 15, 2013. The Compass airs Mondays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., Wednesdays at 10 a.m., and Saturdays at noon, exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.